Thank you, Mega and James, for putting this symposium together. And I'd like to thank you for giving slugs a chance out there. So, actually, my objective is to present you an overview of our invasive slugs from an entomologist's point of view, through an entomologist's eyes. So keep that in mind. And I think I can show you that there are some points of interest, but even more important, I'm going to try and show you some examples of things that might be of value to you as entomologists. Let me give you one example of that. Most of our invasive slugs, as I found out, are actually from Europe. And what had happened over time is that they had evolved and moved into disturbed habitats. And from there, they became susceptible to hitchhiking and ended up here in North America. So this slug, for example, that you can see in the picture there is Arion subfuscus, and I'll use this as an example throughout the talk. However, the USDA, and I'm with the USDA, has been concentrating on intercepting new invasives at their point of entry. Unfortunately, a consequence of that is that we've lost track of the species that are actually already here to a great extent. And on several occasions, I've hosted malacologists from Europe, and they've literally been able to walk out the door and find new species. Now, why this is important to you, because the next time you find a slug sliming up one of your pitfall traps, you might want to think about holding on to that and getting it to a malacologist and getting it identified. You may have stumbled on a new record, which would be at least publishable as a note. And if you collaborate a little bit with the few terrestrial malacologists we have here in North America, you might find that it would even go beyond that. All right, I need to just give you very quickly a little reference here, and that is that to a malacologist, to a terrestrial malacologist, slugs are really snails with a housing problem. And to a malacologist, a slug is nothing more than a snail. This is actually just a life form that is polyphyletic. It's evolved a number of times, even in unrelated families. So it's a perfect example of parallel evolution and also convergent evolution, because it's not unusual to find several different families of slugs coexisting, even under the same border rock. And I should add that almost any slug you're familiar with, whether you see it in your garden, in your backyard, or let alone in a monoculture and in an agricultural system, it's almost surely going to be an invasive slug. Invasive slugs constitute about exactly half of our slug fauna, approximately 25 species. So our indigenous fauna is limited primarily to undisturbed habitats, primarily forests. There are a few exceptions. All right, let me give you an example of the sort of things that you might stumble upon. This is a picture of gypsy moth, late instar larvae, that are migrating down this oak at the end of the life cycle. These are the last instars ready to pupate. But if we look a little closer, and this picture was taken in late June several years ago in New England, in my backyard actually. If you look a little bit closer, each and every one of these larvae is dead, and it has died from an entomophagous fungus that was actually introduced about 75 years ago during the heyday of classically biological control of the gypsy moth. And these larvae had died within the last 24 hours. They came down during the night and died. Now, the reason I'm pointing this out to you is that this fungus was introduced about 75 years ago and for some unknown reason disappeared and then reappeared just in the last decade. And it may ultimately be the one thing that really controls gypsy moth populations, because it caused, for example, this outbreak population to crash. But if we look a little closer at the bottom of the tree, you'll see this same slug that you saw earlier. This is Arion subfuscus. And their primary food happens to be fungus, but they also are generalists, as are all of the invasive species. So this is an optimal food source for this species. And it just might be that Ariensis fuscus has played a role in the disappearance and reappearance of this fungus. Now, I'm not going to talk any more about the fungus because Ann Hayek will be covering entomopathogens in a talk in a few minutes. So there's just a close-up with an isopod to give you a scale. And this is just, as I said, one example of the things that you might stumble upon. Just an observation, or perhaps, like I said, a slug in a pitfall trap. And I'm encouraging you to try to get a hold of one of our few terrestrial malacologists and at least get the specimen to them. Now, this might look like a picture from a grade B science fiction movie, but just one more example of this very same species, Ariensis fuscus. This picture found its way to me from an ornithologist who was desperately trying to get this slug identified, which is another problem. And he thought that he'd found an example of carnivory, of this slug had gotten into this nest and fed on all those fledglings. And he was all excited, on the verge of publishing this as a note. But if you look in the upper left-hand corner, you'll see a slime trail leading down to the slug. This is one thing that we can use in the study of slugs. And it indicates that this slug has never really made it into the nest. This is an opportunist, just like feeding on the dead gypsy moth larvae. What it's done is stumbled upon this nest after it had been attacked probably by a blue jay and it had killed all the fledglings. So he was wrong with his hypothesis, but it does actually point out another very interesting thing with this species and several other invasive species of slugs. As I said, they first were established in disturbed habitats, but now some of them are moving back into the natural habitats like forests. And so the issue of competitiveness with our indigenous fauna is something that we need to be aware of. And unfortunately, like so many of the other points I'm going to mention, it has not yet been explored. So that's another thing that might be of interest to you. We really don't have a white rat for slugs. That is an animal that we can work with in the laboratory, whether we're doing something like I was doing here with food choice studies. So I experimented and used several different species, rearing them in the laboratory. I found that this very large slug, which some of you may have seen, especially if you live in the Northeast or in the Pacific Northwest, which are the two areas with the most diverse invasive slug fauna because they match the areas climatically where they originally came from. And this species turned out to be very easy to rear in the lab. Here I'm rearing it on the left on a gypsy moth artificial diet, and on the right just on lettuce, which is a food that's commonly used in experiments with slugs. And I should mention that this slug has a spectacular mating behavior. What happens is that the two animals will find each other, usually on a branch or some ledge, and then in a matter of seconds, they'll form this rope of slime and drop down and suspend themselves in midair, attached to this rope of mucus, and copulate, which is what they're doing there. They wrap around each other, and the genitalia are inverted, and they also wrap around each other. And the male will then transfer spermatophore to the female. And I should point out that all slugs are hermaphroditic, and all of those that have been reared in an isolated way will self-fertilize and reproduce. But in nature, probably they almost always cross-fertilize, as you're seeing here. So this is of great significance as far as the impact of invasive slugs. What that means is that one animal, any one animal, can function and reproduce and establish a population. And there's no question that that happens. this is just the results of one of those feeding studies. And as you can see here, the artificial gypsy moth diet was optimal, and that was true across the board. And this is a good example to represent that these are, in fact, generalists and will thrive on any situation. And this, unfortunately, happens when the conditions are right and there happens to be a monoculture, a crop, and they can. I've seen in Pennsylvania where an entire field of corn was wiped out by a slug and had to be replanted, one of the common invasive species. All right, I just want to mention that there are some species of slugs that we've identified that are potential invasives. This is one species in Europe, Arion lucitanicus, another Arionid slug, that for some unknown reason has broken out of Spain and in the last decade swept across Europe all the way to Russia. It's a tremendous nuisance pest, and it also is an agricultural pest, feeding on a number of crops. And the Europeans feel it's just a matter of time until this species becomes established in North America. And if that happens, it'll be a disaster. And what we need to do is work with these colleagues and learn all we can about species like this one. My lab was actually invaded by an invasive slug. This is another large slug that's found throughout the United States. Unlike most species, it's warm hardy and will survive in the south as well as in the north. This is Limacus flavus. And this came to our lab on a shipment of ash trees, ash seedlings from a nursery in California that were being used for a study on another invasive species, the emerald ash borer. And fortunately, I could recognize it. And from this one species, I was able to establish a colony. It didn't matter if it had made it or not, because as I told you, an individual will self-reproduce, any slug. They are all hermaphroditic. And so I'll use this species just to quickly go through the life cycle of a typical invasive slug. These are the eggs. They're laid in clusters of about 50, and they'll lay them at about monthly intervals throughout the breeding season, which is usually the summer, although they may go into an estivation in the middle of the summer when it gets real dry. And each species, the eggs are very distinctive. These are actually chained together and they look like pearls. And as the embryos develop, you can actually see the embryos through the eggs. And my wife's a biology teacher and she uses these to teach embryology. It turns out they usually use fish eggs, which are much more difficult because you've got to keep them in water. So this is a benefit, an unintended benefit that you might want to think about with slugs, if you can rear them. And just to finish the life cycle, this is the immature slug. This is a immature that's just eclosed from an egg. This is the same species, about a centimeter long. The immatures look exactly like the adults, although they may have external morphological patterns that will change as the slug develops. But I should point out the only way to positively identify a slug is from an adult slug, because you have to look at the genitalia. And that in and of itself is a major problem when slugs are intercepted at ports of entry by the USDA. If it's not an adult, it can't be positively identified. And I'll refer to that again in a second. All right, now I just want to summarize the pathways, the three main pathways that, at least I break it down into three main pathways for our invasive species. The main one, at least to this point, which I've already mentioned, is from Europe. And that's mainly a function of trade over the years. And I should point out that most of those species from Europe are now dispersed throughout North America. Most of the invasives, for example, on the West Coast are actually European species. Then we also have a cluster of slugs that are finding their way to North America from South America using the Caribbean islands as a stepping stone, and to an extent through Mexico too, but this is the main pathway. This family of slugs that are tropical are distinct from the slugs that have invaded the U.S. from Europe. And these are limited more because they're not as cold hardy to the southern states, the Gulf Coast, Florida, and Texas. Although recently they've showed up elsewhere. And then this pathway is not nearly as important. Okay, I just want to give a quick example of a pathway that's been studied in detail. This is that same species. It's been found to have actually recently two species. This is one of the reasons we're not at all clear about how many species we have. And as you can see here, by some molecular diagnostics, we were able to trace the origin of the Cepusca species that are found in North America. Okay, actually there's three species, three groups of pests. We're going to look primarily at this one. And as you can see here, they're found on a number of crops. And the other two groups that I'm just going to show you here, I'm not going to go into any detail because of time constraints. These are not nearly as important. In fact, in a conference call with the CDC, they said concentrate on the agricultural problem. Okay, so just to summarize, slugs are snails with a housing problem. They have three life stages, unique anatomy and reproduction, life cycle 1 to 2 years, slugs and man, pests and decomposers. Okay, I want to quickly go through a few options for future biocontrol. First of all, recently there's been some work done in Europe on a nematode that's been isolated, and it's actually been commercialized and it's marketed in 14 countries in Europe, but it's not yet available in North America. And this might look familiar. These are the main problems that they've run into. The cost, it requires refrigeration, soil must be moist, larger slugs are not affected, and that's important. Okay, there are several other options, including these so-called beetle banks. And you might be familiar with this for insect control, and it has been proven to be effective, but to our knowledge, this has not yet been used for controlling invasive slugs. Now, there's a whole group of animals that are potential biocontrol agents. I've already mentioned coleoptera and nematodes. I just want to quickly point out a few dipter families. Most important are the Sciomycid flies or marsh flies. There's over 500 species, and all except two of these are found to be malacophagous. And this group here, you can see, has been used for biocontrol in Hawaii. I should point out a word of caution there, because there is a group that has some problems, mainly due to host specificity. And then there are nine species of Sciomycids that are found to feed exclusively on slugs. Several of these species are in Europe and several are in North America. All of these are potential for augmentative releases or classical biocontrol. And there's several other species that I'm not going to go into any detail on. One of these feeds only on our indigenous slugs, so of course that one would not be considered for biocontrol. And then, surprisingly, there are two other families of flies, which you might be surprised to know, can play a minor role in potential biocontrol, the forids and the sarcophagins. So I just want to conclude by saying that I hope I've been successful in showing you slugs through the eyes of an entomologist, and I just want to quickly acknowledge these terrestrial malacologists in Europe that helped me slug across Europe. And one final take-home message: if you really want to know invasive slugs, you need to study them in their indigenous habitats, whether you're talking about Arion cepusquus, which I've mentioned several times, which is already established, or Arion lusitanicus, which is a potential threat. So thanks.